This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Let's welcome in Professor Matthew Schmidt from the University of New Haven. He's our go-to guy, he should be, for everybody on stuff with Ukraine and Russia. Of course, he teaches political science and other things at the University of New Haven. Hey, I meant to ask you, Professor, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Is there real concern at the university about, you know, foreign students not be, because you have a lot of international kids, right? Is that a real problem for you guys if there are fewer kids able to come?
It is a problem if there are. We haven't seen any sign of that yet, but it's early. Those numbers will really start to show up in the fall. But so far, we're business as usual.
Good. Obviously, the image of President Trump sitting down with Zelensky. We saw the Truth post when he called him Vladimir. I'm trying to figure out if there's real tension between him and Putin, or is this sort of a performative song and dance to try to, I don't know, make it look like they're not close, but they're, I don't know. It just seems this, it's just weird. It's all very weird to me.
Oh, no, there's real tension between Zelensky and the president, for sure.
Well, what about Putin? What about Putin and the president?
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. You know, I think there's a lot of performance on both sides. I think both of their personalities are very heavily, sort of scripted in that way, more Putin's than Trump's. So I do think that's there. And I think right now it's understood that, Trump coming back and pushing Putin for the first time, right, is a kind of performance for the negotiation. Yeah.
So what do you think it's sort of like we do these check-ins, right? I'm checking in with you to see where your head is at in this whole process. Right now, what do you think?
My gut, more than my head, at this point, because of the way things go, I sort of look at this as like a play, right, with three acts. And where are we going, right? Where's the narrative arc? And I still think that the narrative arc is heading towards a ceasefire, primarily because both sides, in fact, need this to happen. What's tricky for people on the outside is that the time frame in which they need it to happen is similar but different enough that you can miss it. The Ukrainians have a much tighter time frame if weapons get shut off, right? They need to move to a ceasefire in the next year. The Russians could last past that. The Russians have sort of a 12 to 18 month window that they need to reach ceasefire at, because they have manpower and production problems too. The Ukrainians are worried because, a two-year ceasefire will allow the Russians to fix those manpower and production problems. That's precisely what they're worried about and why they want a security guarantee. Right. But the fact is that, the next 12 to 18 months, there's a lot of pressure on both sides to shut this down, at least temporarily. And so that's why I think it will happen.
You know, I see all these different posts. You know, we make a big deal when there's a bombing and, like, nothing, no loss of life is insignificant, but there's like 5 people dead, 12 injured. And then Trump comes out and says there's 5,000 people a week dying in this conflict. Is that true?
He's high on that number, but if you look at both sides, the numbers are pretty stark. I mean, the Russians, it's not 5,000, but the Russians are losing 1,000 a week on the front lines. The Ukrainians are probably losing something equivalent to that. And then civilian casualties are not another 3,000, but they're in the dozens. So it's a significant, I mean, if you do the math on, call it, you know, 2,500 deaths a week times 52 weeks, that's a lot.
I just didn't know, because we don't see a lot outside of the stuff that hits non-military. Like, we don't see a lot outside of the civilian deaths. So I have no idea what the numbers are.
Yeah, they're really quite astounding. And 60 to 70% of those casualties on the front lines now are driven by drones. Huh. It's people staying in the trenches and fighting drone wars right now, which I think the public doesn't realize either. It's like World War I, but with drones.
Yeah. Matthew Schmidt is a professor of political science at the University of New Haven, joining us here on Brian and Company. This issue of Crimea, which, you know, President Trump points out was lost to the Russians during the Obama administration, which really didn't do anything, right? And
lost to Ukrainians. You did it this time.
No, it was lost to the Russians.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. And dang, I thought I had you.
No, well, it's easy to get me, but I think I might have said it right. But anyway, now Zelensky's saying, you know, well, we want Crimea back, and Trump's saying, well, that was settled long ago. You can't ask for that type thing. What do you think the geographical concessions that are going to have to happen here for Ukraine to have peace?
So the thing about Crimea is it's written after 2014. It was written into the Ukrainian constitution that Crimea is Ukrainian and forever will be. So it's not actually in Zelensky's power to just wave a wand and give a concession there. And I don't think that Trump understands that. So it's a much bigger deal where he would have to, as by design, he would have to marshal public support, to marshal parliamentary support, to be able to do that. But what he is signaling very strongly is that there's a difference between legal concession on the ground and de facto, right? And what he's essentially saying is look, we'll accept the facts on the ground that it's under Russian occupation, but we can't legally cede that, because at some point in the future, 10, 20, 30 years from now, right, a future Ukraine may want it back, a future, Crimea may want to come back to Ukraine that's in the EU. And that's really his position.
Hmm. Anything else people should know about?
I think the big worry in the long term here is the reconstruction, and whether or not Ukraine's going to get enough money to do that. If they get, you know, if they get 2/3 of what they need, they're in trouble, because if they don't rapidly rebuild an economy that is highly functioning, then their economic stagnation will be a place where, you know, Putin can interfere again. Right? He doesn't want to own all the dirt. He wants to control the politics, and a bad economy will allow him to do that. And the problem with that is despite what the Europeans say, the minute that Ukraine comes into the EU or even has labor rights in the EU, their labor rates are less than half of the average EU country's labor rate, which means that they're going to be a huge economic threat to places like Poland and Greece and Hungary. So I don't think that accession is going to go as easily as people talk about it. And that's a real long-term danger.
Interesting. Thanks, Professor. I'm in trouble. I'm going over. So I got to run.
Okay, all right. Thanks.
Have an awesome day. Thank you, as always. We so appreciate it.
Anytime. Bye-bye. Right.
Professor Matthew Schmidt joining us here from the University of New Haven.